Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. It is the 26th of June, 2013, here in Japan. It is the 25th in the United States, where we are joined on the line from FEMA region something or other, headquarters there in Atlanta. We are joined by none other than the rock star of the alternative media movement, Jack Blood from DeadlineLive.info. Jack, thanks again for your time.
Hey, James. We're Sector 6 here in Atlanta. We go off of whatever the Federal Reserve District is, so we are District 6 now.
District 6. Well, that sounds like a movie title or something like that. Well, I hope hope things are okay for you there in Atlanta today and not too blustery, not too rainy, not too, you know, stormy.
Oh, I don't go outside. I went outside yesterday to teach my 9-year-old how to skateboard, and I wiped out. I bit it really hard. This was the first lesson. Don't do this.
come to think of it, I'll be very good at teaching my son how not to do a lot of things like that.
So. Well, I was going to say, you're going to be doing that in about 9 years or so. But I love the skateboarding scene because there's a lot of straight edge kids in that, and generally they get a bad rap. They're all pretty good kids, so we're he likes it. And I know that's not why you had me on to talk, though, James. But congratulations on the new addition to the Corbett family, and always an honor to be with you, my friend.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that. Okay, well, then let's roll up our sleeves and get to it. I want to hit up the Michael Hastings case. Obviously, I know you've been following this closely. I haven't talked about it a lot on the Corbett Report yet, so why don't we set the table for people? Why don't you just tell them a little bit about what this story is and why it's important, and then we can get into some of the details.
You know, Michael Hastings was, I don't know if you want to call him a mainstream news investigative reporter, but he did get a lot of mainstream coverage. He writes for BuzzFeed and Rolling Stone. His biggest article had gotten General McChrystal in a lot of trouble, and he ended up getting fired for that. McChrystal, if some people might remember, was also the cover-up artist in charge in the Pat Tillman fragging. So he had it coming, certainly. He was somewhat involved in the Petraeus scandal, which could merge into the Snowden information if we get there. But he's a guy who really bit into a story, really had, you know, real sources, wasn't just satisfied with repeating what came over the email or the fax machine from the Pentagon or the White House. He wasn't a huge fan of the establishment, and he was just really one of those old-fashioned reporters, a young guy who was only 33 years old, racing, as witnesses say, through the streets of Hollywood around 4:30 in the morning, hits a tree in his brand-new Mercedes, and the thing explodes. The engine ends up 100 feet away from the car. All of this, of course, very suspicious. It just recently came out then that he had emailed people before, I believe just hours before the crash, saying he's being investigated by the FBI. They need to get ready for this at BuzzFeed. And that he was going to go off the radar for a while because he was working on a new story that was supposed to be a big one. And so the timing of his death has people really very suspicious. We're, of course, all being called conspiracy theorists because, well, I don't know, James, we don't believe what the Los Angeles police are telling us about the crime scene or, sorry, the accident scene. But their track record is horrendous for telling the truth. So obviously, we should all be very suspicious on this. So I'm not the first reporter that has been killed, not the last. Are we charging the government with this or the elites or the New World Order? Not particularly, but somebody did not want to hear what he was going to be reporting. And you don't generally see a brand new Mercedes. And if somebody does, let me know, because it reminds me of Building 7 just falling into its footprint at a near free fall speed. You don't see Mercedes just blowing up upon impact. That's why people buy Mercedes, so they don't do that. And just the fact that, you know, it happened at a time where there weren't any witnesses, and it's just such an opportune time to get this guy. We think he was taken out.
Well, obviously there is some speculation involved here, but let's look at some of the evidence that's coming out, including, I don't know if you saw Richard Clark's recent statement. Richard, your government failed you on 9/11. Clark came out to say that this is at least consistent with a cyber attack on the car, and he says the problem with that is you can't prove it. A pretty startling thing for the former national security advisor to be saying.
So what was he? I didn't hear that. What was he saying? That the car was hacked and crashed and blew up?
This was even reported in Huffington Post. He says, "I'm not a conspiracy guy. In fact, I've spent most of my life knocking down conspiracy theories. But my rule has always been you don't knock down a conspiracy theory until you can prove it wrong. And in the case of Michael Hastings, what evidence is available publicly is consistent with a car cyber attack. And the problem with that is you can't prove it."
oh, good, let's blame the Chinese then for it.
Well, you know that's where that's going, because Clark has written about the cyber attack phenomenon before.
Well, anything, yeah, sure, anything to bring the cyber police in and to, you know, crack down on us hackers out there. But that's very interesting. You know, some people have pondered that this looked like a remote control job. And look, I mean, we all need to be grown-ups now. We have drones that can be joystick from halfway around the world and do precision killing. So we're not, this isn't before 9/11 or even just after, where people were wondering and pondering and theorizing that maybe those planes could have been remote controlled. Obviously, and I've spoken to, you know, heavyweight generals that told me that technology had been in place for a long time, even before 9/11. So it's that's definitely possible. There would be evidence of that on the car. So, wow, do we have kill switches in our cars now? Is that what Richard Clark is saying? That's fascinating.
It is. And in fact, he's not the only one who said it. There was some researchers that came out a little while ago, and I don't have it in front of me, so I think it was a year or two ago, but they came out saying that basically, yes, cars can be hacked into remotely now, and you can turn off the brakes or turn on the acceleration or whatever you need to do to cause a car crash. And this was kind of quietly reported on, but there's already been people researching this. So it's definitely a phenomenon.
I think it was the spectacular nature of the crash, and all the coverage it's been getting in the mainstream media shows me that it was kind of a warning to other journalists. And, you know, there's been other things that have been going on in the Obama White House here in the United States, where he is trying to make documents just not even exist so that they can't be FOIA requested. Not that they're going to redact those anyway. It's amazing that they go through all of this. You know, when have they ever been in modern times been scared of a reporter? This is definitely a throwback, because normally what they would do is discredit the reporter or make something up or plant some evidence on them, you know, or hound them, as we saw that happened to Aaron Schwartz or Gary Webb or others. And Gary Webb's another guy, the author of Dark Alliance, who was reporting that there were people snooping around his house, that he was being watched. And then the next thing, you know, he's committed suicide twice, actually shot himself twice in the head. And I don't mean to be sarcastic or unfeeling, or I'm not trying to make jokes about it, but it is almost funny that they want us to believe it. So they killed him not because they were afraid of what he would report, because I think they could have controlled that somehow. Look at all the scandals that this government has weathered over just the last few years. And so it seems that they have a pretty good handle on how to move these things along and get a new scandal or get a new event or some distraction to get people off of it. So I don't know how afraid they might have been of what he was going to dig up, though I've had my fingertips on documents that no one else had and been, you know, really become the story myself. And we've, you know, taken some pretty heavy threats. So, but they try to buy you off. They try to smear you. They'll threaten you and try to get you to quit. I assume they might have tried some of this stuff on Michael Hastings. But I really thought that, and I was watching a Young Turks episode. We were playing that on my show today, James, and it looked like this was a warning, 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 warning. This is very dangerous, doing real reporting. You better not do it. You better consider, you know, before you get in and you want to be Michael Hastings. It's very dangerous. So it's kind of meant to be a shot over the bow to every so-called professional investigative reporter in the country.
Sounds a lot like what's happening with Snowden and the message that's being put out there for any would-be whistleblowers in the national security establishment.
Exactly. And that story, as we talked about yesterday, has a lot of things, a lot of red flags in it that really bother me. And you did a fantastic job on my show the other day talking about the Russ Tice information. And there's several whistleblowers who had come out about the NSA saying what we thought was more than Snowden. So why are they making such a big deal about it? And then you've got Schumer and other. It doesn't seem to separate from party lines, does it? But people on both parties calling him a traitor. I was watching Piers Morgan on CNN last night, and he had Gloria Allred and Alan Dershowitz, of all people, on to comment and call this guy a traitor and say that he should be prosecuted and how he broke the law. So the establishment seems to agree on something for once from both the phony sides of the Demopublicans and the Republicrats, and that this guy should be prosecuted for what he has done. So what do we get from him? Not too much, but what are we going to get? That's going to be really a very rigorous program to get in anywhere near any of this information. You really are going to have to be practically microchipped to get anywhere near this information if you're thinking about, you know, leaking documents into the future. This gives them the opportunity to certainly lock down a lot of their information, and it sets a precedent to seriously punish whistleblowers, as you know.
It certainly does. Well, before we leave transition off of the Hastings story, let's circle back, because you raise a very good point that generally the system would prefer to just smear or discredit a reporter rather than kill them in a spectacular fashion. And I assume that what you're talking about is this is going to send a message to the people out there that, you know, this is what happens to reporters, etc., and that could be useful for them. But it does raise a good point of why they'd go to this length. And something that comes to my mind is that generally when these kind of spectacular deaths occur, there's something that's very threatening to the system behind them. When you look at someone like Terry Yakey, who ends up getting butchered in his car and then drags himself across the field and shoots himself in the back of the head, according to the official story, who was about to reveal information about what really happened at the Oklahoma City bombing. Or you have someone like Danny Casolaro working on the octopus, as he called it, and said he is about to break the case wide open, ends up going dead and his manuscript going missing in his hotel room, etc. Generally, there's some kind of spectacular information that's being covered up in those types of cases. Any indication, any thought, any speculation as to what Hastings may have been working on or what this may have been involving?
This supposedly was working on something involved in further exposing the Petraeus ring, if you want to call it that. I have a hard time believing that, because that had already been accomplished, though David Petraeus was at Bilderberg this year, so they've got some kind of plans for him. I really don't believe that. I think it might have been connected to the NSA spying thing. And let's just say, I mean, wild speculation that he knew something about Snowden that the rest of us didn't know.
Well, maybe. Exactly right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Snowden then. We've already touched on it a little and how this is going to set that kind of spectacular example for people in the establishment. Let's talk about any other ramifications of this. Of course, there's the geopolitical game that's going on right now with China and Russia and potentially Ecuador and other countries seeming to stand up in the face of American pressure. Is this some sort of sea change in the global geopolitical game?
It's kind of popular now to poke the big bully with a stick, isn't it? Because we have certainly been a bully over here. And it's not that I don't love my country, but I'm not very proud of how we've acted for the last, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years. Well, let's just make it 100 years. So we certainly have a few enemies. And when there is some weakness, some chinks in the armor, people are going to stand up. Russia and China, as you know, have been building and building and building and becoming more strong and have been more of an asset to us, which is why we're not criticizing them too much these days on anything. So I think that certainly has emboldened other countries, though part of that is the puppet show, isn't it, that there are other countries. I don't know how much of that is even true anymore. And certainly Obama's enemies are using that against him to show that his presidency has been a failure. Otherwise, why wouldn't everybody hand over Mr. Snowden? But then again, if this isn't on the up and up, if we are being snowed, so to speak. And again, going back to Michael Hastings, we know at least some reports is that he was talking to WikiLeaks lawyers, and that could have been not for help, but to investigate them. Maybe we're telling them, you know, don't throw us in the briar patch, so to speak. Maybe they don't want Hastings here. Wouldn't that be the worst thing to happen to the Obama administration? A big trial and Snowden here and all of this comes out and there's more evidentiary information that comes out in the case of the trial. It would be, you know, the trial of the century, so to speak. I'm not sure they want him back.
Well, unless they find a way to Bradley Manning a civilian, which may be, you know, the test case for NDAA. Who knows?
Well, no doubt about that. And I think we can look at some of our trusted public officials as some of the first people to be prosecuted under the NDAA. You know, I think what you were talking about on my show is really important, that the NSA spying isn't so much, well, it isn't really at all to find terrorists. I don't know how much of that is. And it's too bad that Americans are being sold that bill of good and that they actually swallow that hook, line, and sinker, or lock, stock, and bagel, as I often say, that this is about keeping all of us in line. And one of the stories we put up on my website at deadlinelive.info, parents of a slain Navy SEAL were joining a class action lawsuit against the Obama administration because after their son's death, there were tapping sounds on the phone. They got strange texts. Now, you know that the SEALs have not been doing very well lately. They've been being killed in record numbers, dying off. And I think that this might have some connection to the phony Bin Laden killing I still have yet to see any real evidence that they killed bin Laden, and they've been caught lying about that so much that it's obviously making us pretty suspicious, to say the least. Something like that actually happened to me when I was reporting on the Nick Berg beheading years ago. You might remember, James, that we found that the Nick Berg beheading video, and this guy's all connected up into the 12th hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui, with some kind of a weird, spooky contractor working in Iraq, and then he gets beheaded by people wearing gold rings. And, you know, I mean, we pretty much took the video apart. It looked pretty fake and didn't look like an enemy Muslim extremist at all, to be quite frank. But it was uploaded at something called the Arab Press House, which is at the time was, you know, the biggest Arab press company in the world out of London. GoDaddy.com also helped to upload it, and it seemed to me very suspicious at the time, and we started getting a lot of the same thing happening to us. But here's just somebody who lost their son, who was, I'm sure, very patriotic as a Navy SEAL, and what he might have said to them before he died was of extreme interest to the government, to the NSA. So, I mean, they're using this not against terrorists. They're using this to keep people in line, to keep people in check. Most importantly, CEOs, politicians, and middle managers of the New World Order.
Oh, but information would never be used to blackmail the government, right, Jack? We don't have any examples of that from history.
I know. Well, and that's you don't get to the top of the ladder unless you've got some dirt on you. And I think Obama's a perfect example of that. And we all know what he did. Well, a lot of the things he did when he was a kid and a young man growing up, I don't blame him for that, but I think a lot of people would. So they have a pretty tight noose around his nuts, so to speak, with all of that. And they do with everybody else. And a lot of this can be traced back to foreign people such as the AIPAC organizations or Israel. And I'm not just picking them out of a hat or holding them up as just, they're just one example of somebody who's very zealous to get dirt on our politicians and on our middle managers. So they want to make sure, and this is part of the Patriot Act. And now that we know that the Patriot Act is used 99.9% of the time to go after criminals and people in the drug war, is it time to repeal that now? We were supposed to have change and transparency and all the rest of it under this administration. Nothing has happened today. Obama is putting out, Thursday, he's going to announce an executive order that is going to give some kind of a gift to liberal environmentalists. Maybe that will be some good press for them. They seem a little desperate almost right now for it. And what is absolutely amazing to me is that scandal after scandal after scandal, we're talking about being in bed with the drug cartels in Mexico with Fast and Furious, when we're talking about the IRS being politicized, which is against the law after the Nixon administration to politicize the bureaucrats because in those days they had to break into the Watergate Hotel. Now they don't have to do that, right? It's much easier. So you start adding all this up, the getting the records from reporters to find their sources, intimidate them and shut them up, that big scandal that popped loose, and then this one. And what does Obama say? If you don't trust us, there's going to be a problem, almost threatening us in all of this. So it is absolutely mind-boggling how this guy gets through so many of these scandals.
Well, it might be a good time to go back and revisit the Watergate scandal because, of course, as we know now, it was a deliberately botched job that was meant to be found out and was meant to take down Nixon. So there's perhaps some interesting parallels between that and what's happening now with Obama, as he seems to be being discarded like yesterday's birdcage liner. So
very perceptive. Is he worth more dead than alive at this point?
Could very much be the case, and he's been compared to Lincoln since his inauguration, and of course now with Steven Spielberg's latest cultural programming. So who knows what they're setting people up for, but on that ominous note, I've been kind of directing things, but anything else that's happening right now on your radar that you'd like people to think about?
Well, you know, I know you wanted to talk about what we can do and how there are some positive things happening. And certainly, like, you know, we'll talk about the pork in the immigration bill, you know, that the FBI foiling its own death ray plot. This was some kind of a racial setup to ignite racial violence potentially in the country, divide and conquer and all the usual things. And so people can check out our website for some of this. We're also covering the Whitey Bulger trial because he was a double agent with the FBI, this mobster, this Boston mobster. So that's kind of interesting. And obviously, you know, we think things are heating up in Syria. They're amassing troops now over there, and it looks like there's going to be a major intervention at that point. And as we talked about yesterday, following some of these revolutions around the world. So, you know, there's a lot of things to cover. We're very busy. I like to stay focused on things like the Michael Hastings story because I don't want it to fall down the rabbit hole. But as I think you were alluding to off the air, there are a lot of really good things happening. And though I'm not going to be the guy saying everyone's waking up, people certainly are caring more about the things they hear and becoming more aware and even more active.
Oh, you contrarian, you. I was, in fact, going to bring out the everyone's waking up card, so why don't we talk about that a little bit? For people who don't know, I'm working on a podcast for this Friday talking about reasons we are winning this fight, and it is perhaps an unpopular thing to talk about, as you alluded to on your show last night. You said you didn't want to concentrate on that because you'd lose half your listeners, and it's probably true. So many people are so attuned to threats and to looking at how everything's going to hell in a handbasket and what's wrong that it is actually, you get the most kickback and feedback, I'm sure you do, I know I do, when you try to be positive and you try to point out some of the good things that are happening, and you get a lot of negativity from people who want to believe that everything is controlled and everything is going to hell. So why don't we talk a little bit about this? I don't want to be Pollyanna-ish about it, but I really do think that there are people who are waking up, or at least people who are starting to question, well, wait, Obama's controlled, and he was the one I put my hope and change in, and I don't trust anyone now. I've seen that sentiment expressed more and more online in the past few weeks, and I'm sure they'll find a way to try to sweep that under the rug, but it, you know, at the very least, we have the chance to use this as an opportunity to expose people to what's really going on.
You wonder sometimes if that isn't a product of social engineering, that they want us disengaged and apathetic, and when you look at a 10% approval rating of Congress in the United States, both parties, you look at the fact that 50% of people that can vote don't vote in elections. I think we should be voting with our money, certainly. I know that people care more, and I'm seeing people come along that have known about my work for years, personal friends and family and whatnot, who are much more interested in what I'm doing today than what I was doing, you know, even 5 years ago. And I think that if that can lead to action, then we're going to see a lot of really good things happening. We have fought the battles on the streets, in the legislature, in the media, and we've won a lot of things. And I could tell you in Texas, it's unconstitutional to have checkpoints, though there are virtual checkpoints and border stuff going on in Texas. They can't just put up a drunk driving dragnet and go fishing for people. And that was ruled in the Supreme Court, and we worked very hard on that. We stopped Gardasil from being some kind of a mandatory vaccine in Texas. We stopped No Child Left Behind, the New Freedom Initiative, which is the testing and then subsequent drugging of our children in school. So those are just some of the things we've won in the past. I know that there has been some victory in getting fluoride out of the water in some towns and cities in America. That's something that seems to be growing. The exposing of aerosol spraying, the health hazards and food hazards and weather hazards that could go into that. Certainly people are a lot more interested in that today than they were just even a couple of years ago, where, you know, you used to be called a kook to even talk about it. So the awareness level is up. Awakeness, I think, is a little bit different, because then you've got to really go down the proverbial rabbit hole, James, as you do, and talk about things like secret societies. This is something even JFK alluded to not long before his death, that you have to talk about the interconnected web. You have to talk about world government and some of these end game or agenda aims by the global super elite. And that is still something very hard for people to accept. So I think, you know, just on a basic level, let's just say it's the not the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning.
I certainly hope that at the very least it's the end of something. And again, I've only been in this for a handful of years compared to someone like yourself. You've been around longer than I have doing this, so you have a bigger perspective on it. But even in the time I've been around, I have seen a total sea change in awareness and in understanding, and even just the space to have these types of conversations in relatively mainstream venues. I've seen all of that changing. I see that there's at least the possibility for hope in all of that, that we can change the societal conversation. What's your take on that? Do you think that there has been a change in recent years, or am I just imagining?
Yeah, sure. But look, we have to be careful that we're not used. We know how the Tea Party originally started out under Ron Paul in 2007, totally different than the Tea Party or Teocons, as I call them, what's left of them today. Occupy, again, something in common with the Tea Party against Wall Street, the Tea Party against the Federal Reserve and corporate welfare and war and all the rest of it. So many things we could all agree on. That Monsanto protest, a perfect example of being able to put aside political proclivities and differences and work together on something, which is, of course, why it was blacked out and not reported. What's really important and what everybody listening to this podcast should consider is don't just go out and rail against the machine just to do that. They know you're upset. Trust me. By the way, they're listening to our phones and checking our emails and looking at us on Facebook. They're very aware that we are aware and that we are awake and that we are upset. What do we want? See, this has to be the discussion now. I think we get stuck spinning our wheels. People are still trying to prove that 9/11 was an inside job, and it's, you know, whatever, 12 years later. I think a lot of people, if you poll them, will accept that, like the Kennedy assassination. Like 90% of the people don't believe, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. There was some kind of a conspiracy there. Where do we go with it? Because to use one example, people want to end the Fed, end the Federal Reserve. But nobody seems to have a very clear idea on what they want to take its place. And I certainly have my suggestions, and we try to talk about that on the show. You don't want Obamacare or something. Well, then what do you want? So we have to begin coming to some kind of a consensus, and that's not groupthink, but we at least need to be on the same page on what freedom is going to be, what we want the world to look like, and how we're going to work to make that happen, to achieve that. So a lot of times you'll hear people, and this is what you were alluding to earlier with, you know, kind of putting out fear porn and just becoming a scary movie for people on the radio or whatnot. You know, a lot of times I believe that, you know, people have been conditioned to that, because then there won't be an end game. So we need, they have an end game. They're 20 steps ahead of us on the grand chessboard. We need to catch up here. So I think that this would be a great time now to discuss this. We have made a lot of progress. People don't want to acknowledge it. Again, going back to still trying to prove 9/11 is an inside job, or Oklahoma City was not what they told us. We're living in the past a little bit, James. We need to move up and get it 10 steps ahead again, and start having discussions on what kind of institutions we want, if any. What are the, and terrible word, but what are the solutions? What are the answers? What are we working for here? What is freedom, not what isn't it?
It's a very good point, and I agree with you. I think there needs to be this conversation at the very least, which could be the beginning of the end, but or the end of the beginning, should I say. But I think there's so many different points to pick up on there. Why don't we just finish on this one? I'm looking at ways that that we can start that broader cultural conversation, and whether or not there's the space to have that in the place that we're in, and whether or not there's time enough to have that. Because again, I think that if this were a generational thing, I think our victory would be assured over time. I think that the momentum is on our side, but when you look at some of the technologies that are coming in, and the way that that is kind of hardwiring in relations between people, and the types of things that governments are capable of doing now, just far exceeds anything that's ever been possible in human history. Right. I'm not sure we do have all day or all generations.
Well, no, because our people are going to be in power. All right. So now you're looking at the fact that young people, you can call them, some people call them children of the new earth. There is almost a new kind of an evolution that has to go with this technology. And these are the people that are listening to people like you, James, and learning some lessons about ethics and morality that apparently skipped a generation. So while it is a good point, it's very important to bring up. We are the first generation of this mass technology, space technology, wireless, you know, obviously the could be said that the Tesla patents had all this stuff a long time ago, but we have this now, and our grandparents didn't even have a TV. You know, we're almost wired directly in. If you look at Google Glasses and stuff, we're almost wired in like Borg. So we have to be able to understand the challenges that takes and oversee it with, I think, a people's council. If you want to come on my show sometime or have me on yours, we'll talk about all the solutions. That could be really fun. But I just totally believe that we have to assume control. We have to assume the victory. And it might be something that goes every single generation until there was a massive shift in violent consciousness to a peace and love consciousness, as gay as that might sound. Sorry, I love the gays. I didn't mean it like that. Now I'm going to get Paula Deaned. As kind of weak or airy-fairy as that sounds, we definitely need a major shift in consciousness, and I believe in assuming the victory. So, but it is something we're going to have to teach our children. It's something they're going to have to stay on top of and teach their children and then teach their children and their children and their children. It will only take one generation to sit back and relax a little bit before this all happens again. I want to recommend a movie called Land of the Blind. It's really fun to watch. It's free on YouTube. My friend Robert Edwards did it. He has a really good career in Hollywood going until he made this film. And there's some big stars in it. And the crux of the film is that you win and the revolutionary leader gets to be the new president or whatever. And he is worse than the last guy. So what we don't want to do is meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And if we keep doing what we've always done, we're going to keep getting what we always got. So those are my words of advice. We, as consumers, we have huge voting power to put our money on things that work for us as opposed to things that don't. And it's good for your listeners and mine to get familiar with where their life force, where their money's actually going, what it's actually supporting down the pipeline. And a lot of this can be solved very quickly.
I couldn't agree more. I think that we don't even realize the power that we have every single day, every decision we make, what to invest our time or attention or our energies or our money on is an investment in what kind of future we want. And we make that decision either through knowledge or by default. So The Land of the Blind, it sounds like a fascinating movie. I haven't seen it, but it is there on YouTube, as I see. So perhaps it's worth taking a look at. And who knows, maybe a future candidate for our Film Literature in the New World Order podcast series. So if we could get and your friend on to talk about that might
He was doing interviews. We were trying to get this film in major distribution. And you know how hard that is when a film hits a little too close to home?
Yeah, I can imagine.
Your hit. And he told me, you know, hey, I'm talking to Johnny Depp and he knows all this stuff that's going on. So there are some pretty cause celeb people out there that understand the cause, but they don't want to be the first ones on the dance floor. So part of our job here as the global community, so to speak, is to make it safer, to make it easier for whistleblowers or for celebrities, if that matters to people, and even politicians that are right on the edge that want to do the right thing but are scared if they don't go along, they're going to get taken out. So we have to make the world a little bit easier and a little safer for more and more people to join this cause of global and even universal freedom. I love talking about this stuff, as you can see, because I have such a vision of my own after all these years of reporting the bad news of what we can do to get out of this. And so I hope people spend more time listening to the podcast you're doing on this more positive bent than they do listening to how we're being spied on all the time and we got to be paranoid and careful about what we do, because that's the fear we lose on, the love we win on.
Absolutely right. Well, that sounds like a fascinating conversation that we can continue hopefully next month. So I'm looking forward to talking more about that, because I think there's definitely a lot of things that people can and should be doing that can truly make a difference. And I don't think we have to give into the pessimism. All right, I think we're going to leave it there, Jack, but why don't we tell people about Deadline Live and how they can listen to your live show?
Very easy. There's a million different ways to listen. We're on at various times throughout the day. Just go to deadlinelive.info. If you forget that, just don't Google, but Dogpile or some other search engine. That's another thing. Get away from Google. Just put Jack Blood in your search engine and you'll find everything that I do. But deadlinelive.info is my website. And I got the great interview you did on my show the other day, front and center on our front page, and people should go listen to that.
I appreciate that very much, and I certainly hope that people out there who do appreciate the work you're doing will support it. It's value for value, just like Corbett Report. So if you do appreciate Jack's work, I hope you'll chip in a few dollars. And unlike the Corbett Report, where all you get is a measly subscriber newsletter or some DVDs, with Jack Blood, you get Blood Karma. So I hope people will get their infusion today.
Karma bank is good to me, and I like to spread the wealth, so to speak, man. Thank you, James. You're the man. I love what you do, and keep on keeping on. Stay bold, brother.
You too. Appreciate it.